to be the sort of inward looking, looking after the students, their travel, overseeing travel arrangements and budgets and things like that.
Helen?
Yes, so I'm Helen Tilbrook. I'm the IGGI administrator at York, so working closely with Tracy.
Yeah, and I'm the IGGI manager for QMUL, and doing more or less Tracy's job, but for the QMUL side. And also my role is outward facing towards industry liaison and that sort of aspect of IGGI, public relations, social media. Right, so I think we're going to start with the next presentation, which will be on the documents you will need to submit with your application, and I'll be leading that presentation. To begin with, I just wanted to I should share screen probably, that'd be a good idea. Okay, can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm here on the IGGI apply page. So that just to show you, there's a tab called completing and submitting your application. So if you click that, it should scroll down right to this section. And I am in this presentation basically going down each individual point of this section. There's also, which I will mention in the presentation as well, a submission checklist. So when you click this, you will get a checklist, which you do not need to submit. You can if you want to. It's useful for us to see that you've checked everything, but it's for you personally to keep track of all the documents that you need to supply. Okay, so I'm starting my slideshow. So yeah, I mentioned this, the checklist, and that's provided online, but it doesn't need to be submitted. So these are the things that you need to submit, and I have a slide on each of them. So I'm just going to go through them quickly here. So it's your project proposal, a complete IGGI PhD application form, which is an online form. And then separately in an email, we need your academic transcript, a short CV, a cover letter, two written references, evidence of your technical skills, proof of English language skills, if that's applicable. So not all of you have to do that. And then the IGGI recruitment diversity monitoring form is part of the application form. So that's submitted online and it is also voluntary, but we would be very, very grateful if you could submit this and help us keep track of, you know, our goals in terms of EDI and these kind of things. Right, so your project proposal. So much of this was already covered in the previous presentation. I wrote here by Corkans because I wasn't sure that I didn't know that Francesca would also join. So the two of them, I think, presented quite well what's required for this part. So you use the templates and they are provided on the apply page in the section where I just showed you. And on that project proposal, you should put your project title, obviously, and below the project title, state your name, your contact email. You need to identify your chosen supervisor. There's a surprising amount of people who haven't really checked with their supervisor. You know, they've gone for a project, which is also why I said previously, please make sure that you have contacted your supervisor beforehand, that they know you're applying, that you know they support you, and that you have that in written confirmation, because otherwise you might probably not be supported by then, and that's a worry, right? So, and then you should also state, is it a predefined project that you found on our website? Or is it a project, an own framed project, one that you yourself have come up with? The project proposal should be 2 pages or shorter, so you don't score extra points for length, maybe the contrary. The abstract, 100 to 150 words, 1,000 words for the remaining text. This is not including the references, so you can add more text for references. including pages if you need, and extra space is also permissible if you have figures or diagrams, illustrations. Obviously, they won't count towards two pages. Right, the next item is academic transcripts of previous degrees. So we ask for degrees, certificates, and formal transcripts of your academic record. For that, you will need to state the full details of your degree. So institution, where did you make it, the degree title and the grade. And where relevant, also the classes and units you have taken. If your degree result is pending, an interim transcript would do. But I mean, at a later stage, you will obviously need to provide the full transcript, the end result. And if the original certificate or transcript is not in English, please enclose a copy of the original and an English certified translation. So both of these will be needed in that case, not either one or the other. Then a short CV. So the short CV should be between half a page and 2 pages, absolute max in length. It should contain a list of all your qualifications in chronological order. So the most recent first, which helps us to see what is your most recent, your highest level of qualification. And for each qualification, you should include the month and year of when it was awarded or completed, the name of the institution, the degree title, the degree level, the grade awarded, and if possible, your overall GPA score for any undergraduate or postgraduate degree. And then it would be desirable to also enclose some further background information on your prior experience, if that's applicable. Obviously, only what's really relevant, what you feel is relevant, and description of any other relevant skills you may have. We should probably highlight here that we do not only look on academic qualifications. Indeed, it could, in theory, be possible that you could be selected without an academic qualification, but you would then have to profoundly make up for you know, lack thereof. You need to prove that you have some other relevant experience that would qualify you to be able to do the research that you're proposing. Then fourth, a cover letter. So at the top of your letter, please state your contact details. So that includes your telephone number, which we will need, and include the country dial code, please. And we will need that to contact you in an emergency. So for instance, if any of the interviews, the Zoom link fails or something, it's good to have an alternative contact. Your email address, so your preferred email, contact email, then your current home address, the country of residency, which usually is included in the home address. And then please note that this information is shared with all of IGI's staff. So it's obviously kept confidential, but you should be aware that this information is shared among the people who will review your application, including potential supervisors. Then state whether you're applying as a home, EU settled or international student. So, since Brexit, we obviously count EU citizens as international fees candidates unless you can prove settled status. So here are links, but the links are also on the apply page. So I would strongly encourage you, unless you know 100% that you're home, to check whether you qualify for home status, because we have a 30% cap on international fees students. So how it works is the fees are waived by the universities, but there is, or by the EPSRC, but there is a cap of 30%. So we cannot accept any more than 30% people who have international fees status. So the EU students without settled status, they count as international, as mentioned. And if in doubt, please check the links provided at the under this bullet point. And then the letter itself, you should provide a short statement to explain why you wish to do a PhD on the chosen research topic. It should be 250 words max. And and there is not really any requirement to enclose further detail about you. But if you wish to do that, then that's also very welcome. So then on the fifth point, you need two written references. So the references should be two in total. And they should be provided by either a current or a former supervising academic, or by a current or former employer. You should include the corresponding email contact for them in case we want to contact them. So if I think you can probably state that you don't want them to be contacted before you get selected, but be aware that at some point we might want to contact them. Then your chosen supervisor, so the supervisor you put forward cannot be providing this reference. It has to be somebody who's not going to be involved in this future research project that you're proposing. And we often get inquiries to say, can that person, can the referee please email you directly? And the answer to that is, yes, they sort of can at this stage, but once you get selected, you will be required to enter the reference into the university system. So you will have to get hold of that reference text essentially yourself in the end anyway. So to save you work and trouble, you might as well ask the referee directly and provide the references this way to us. Then evidence of your technical skills. Technical skills can be evidenced through your academic transcripts, obviously, that I've talked about them already. Then there could be certificates of courses or online learning programs, a portfolio of works, or examples of your source code is one example, if you have written it yourself. Then skills we're looking for specifically are basic programming skills. So the technical aptitude rather than any specific skill. And there's a number of examples of programming languages that would be useful to have under your belt. If you're less experienced, you should consider taking a relevant MOOC because it could be that. So it's really, really definitely advantageous to have programming skills, especially for some of the modules that are taught. So I wish to highlight that if you think you're lacking those programming skills, it would be good to brush up on them beforehand. And then you might want to prove that you have technical skills required to conduct your proposed research. So for instance, machine learning, design patterns, player experience. Yeah. Okay, then the next point, proof of English language skills. So this may not require this may not be required of all of you. So you should check whether you need to provide proof of your English language skills. And this could be the case if one or more of these apply. So if English is not the first language in the country of your nationality, or if your qualifications were not taught in English language and or were obtained longer than 18 months ago, you may need to evidence that your English language skills are sufficient for this type of program. And if that's the case, I'm not sure. I think there was a link to check this. So if you need to evidence your English language skills, this can be done either via the English language proficiency test. So one of them is the IELTS test or the TOEFL IBT test. And there is an equivalency here. We had an internal debate about this recently. So IGGY actually have a higher bar. So there's an update. I think one of you is on this call who I replied to earlier about this. So you might get a new email from me because we have revised this and we have a higher bar at IGGY than some of the institutions. So we would like to make sure if you need to evidence your language skills that you score a minimum of these as seen in this table. And I've also now added the table on the website, so you can call up this table through the apply page on the website as well. And alternatively, there are alternative ways of proving that you are qualified and that you have sufficient language skills. But these vary from between York and QMUL. So to be precise, for the test, we have an IGGY internal standard, let's say. But for the alternative proof of qualification, you should go by York and QMUL individual institutions guidelines. And these are linked here. So they will tell you which type of alternative qualification is accepted by each uni. Then the IGGY recruitment and diversity monitoring form, as mentioned before, this comes this year as part of the application form already. So this doesn't need to be submitted by email, but it's part of your form. It's not compulsory to fill in, and it does constitute personal data. This personal data, as opposed to your address and all these kind of things, is only shared with admin members. And actually, I can be more precise than that. It's actually only shared with York admin members. So I don't really have access to those details. So we keep the group of people who share these as small as possible. I think it's 2 at the moment, Tracy. Oh, is Tracy still on the call?
Yes, just the 2 of us.
Just the 2, just Helen and you. So, and we do keep them confidential. We just need, so for instance, to track that somebody has applied and then made it through to interview. Sadly, well, this needs to be tracked to a specific person. So there's not any other way of dealing with this other than identifiable data. But as I said, it's only really shared between 2 people. And we keep it very confidential. Then any information you disclose will be treated. Yeah, I said that already. And it will obviously help us to improve our performance and make sure that we reach the diverse pool of people that we are aiming to include. Submission deadline. Yes, important. So the submission deadline for this recruitment is Thursday, 26th of January, and it's at 12 noon Greenwich Mean Time. So please make sure that you submit by this day and by this hour. we have consciously set it to noon midday because sometimes, you know, there are hiccups and we need to reply. So if it's at the end of the day, it's not ideal. It's a hard deadline, so applications received thereafter will be disregarded, and you must submit all documents in one single email, please. So don't scatter your documents because this creates a lot of chaos. Our inbox is overflowing with email, and it's very hard to keep track of emails or documents if they come through different emails. If you need to make changes, rather submit again the whole lot rather than sending individual bits. The exception is this year, the IGGY application form. As mentioned, this is now an online form, so this doesn't need to be included in the email. It's a separate item. And then you should be aware that if your submission is incomplete, so if any documents, the ones that I just listed, are missing, it might render your application invalid. It does happen sometimes that you may not be able to provide a document on time. And if that's the case, then please state that at the bottom of your cover letter and tell us your reason for not being able to provide it. And then we know of it and hopefully we'll be able to accommodate it. There are various documents that you might be able to hand in late, but usually it should be handed in by the date of the interview at the very, very latest. There's an exception to the language proof that we now need. So ideally we need it now. and if not, please supply it by the 25th of February. And any questions? So I think you can pop any questions that you have in the link that we share. I don't know, can you reshare the link maybe, Tracy? To the document. Yeah, so that's it from me. I will probably stop sharing screen and then see if there's any questions in the chat. Lots of things that were said and that I missed.
So we've responded to quite a few of the questions in the chat.
Okay. So application deadline is not 31st of January, it is 26th of January, and it's a Thursday. The recorder, oh yeah, sorry, you replied to that. Are there any unreplied questions? Does anybody know?
Just looking at the question sheet, Suzanne, there's a couple on there.
Okay. Right, question sheets. Here I come. For the degree, so whatever your country is giving you as a result, please just state that. It should be all on the transcript, I guess, but we have an internal system of where we can find equivalencies of your grade. So it hopefully can be done via this way. Which proficiency test is best recommended? Any proficiency tests that we list, any test that you find on the list would be acceptable. There's no specific preference. masters from UK universities, somebody's still typing there. So you should be able to supply the results by the 25th of February. How do you mean it's been delayed? I have to research that. I am not aware of any delays with IELTS. Yes, so for the English, if you need an English language test, you have to go by IGI minimum standards, irrespective of your home university's requirements. For alternative proof of tests, so academic qualifications, degrees that were taught in English, then please go by the list of each individual institution. Of your home institution, if that makes sense. Does that clarify the question? I hope so.
Suzanne, while the questions are coming in, shall I start my presentation and then we could...
Yes, please.
Have a session right at the end, where we...
Yeah, okay, so over to Helen, who's... Sorry,
yeah. Hello. It was to follow up the last answer. I was the one that asked that. So if I understood you correctly, if I fulfill the minimum requirements for IGI, is it okay for me to apply? And then, like, because my concern is that right now, well, I wrote to the email of Apply IGI about that I, for the last year, I went to TOEFL IBT, the home of edition, and I had a 109.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem for me is that QMUL does not accept the home edition anymore. So my question is that enough to apply only, and then I would have to retake the test if I'm accepted, or
how do you mean QMUL does not accept the home edition anymore?
It says that it's not accepted for programs starting later than August 2023.
So my guess is that we would ideally need your proper qualification in before you apply, right, Tracy? Because the thing is, if you fail, you know, we might select you and then you fail that test, and then it would be quite far down the line to tell other applicants that, because if the home university doesn't let you through because of that criteria, then
would it be possible for me to apply to IGI and maybe do the test after being accepted?
That's what I meant. So we accept you. So, you know, we're discarding essentially 80% of our applicants because we found you worth accepting. But then you might fail, you know, that test. And then what do? You know, yeah. It's a bit unfair to others. So I think the what we discussed internally last week is that we really would need language, proof of language as needed before the 25th of February.
Okay, so can you confirm that home edition is no longer accepted for
QMUL? I will need to look that up, because that's honestly I wasn't aware of that being the case, so I will need to follow that up with my uni. Okay,
so well, basically I asked whether I could maybe get a waiver about this,
yeah,
because I'm really like really close to fulfilling, but not as much, and I had proof that I have previous TOEFL standard editions and stuff, but they already out of validity. So
yeah. So I mean, this ultimately isn't in this particular case, it isn't up to IGI's, but up to university. But university gets a lot of applications, and they don't go by individual case and waive individual things, I don't imagine. So it's...
Actually I asked and it said that I had to contact the admission counselor, but since IGI application is different, I don't exactly know who I have to contact.
I mean, yeah, if you want contact, it's just a normal, you can contact them and good luck. They might reply to you, but.
I don't have, because it says that the admission counselor is on the admission portal, but with IGI, I don't have a admission portal. I don't exactly know who is it. I don't know who is it, the one that I have to contact.
Yes. Well, you would not have an admission portal anyway unless you applied already, right? So even if you applied for a different type of PhD, I mean. Okay, so I will try and find this out for you, and then I will be in touch probably at some point tomorrow, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, shall I?
Yes, please, Helen. So this is about the actual submission.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to share my screen. So can you see it? Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Can you see the presentation?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So yeah, so this is about submitting your application and also what happens to your application afterwards. And I'm Helen, by the way. So we're going to cover how to submit your application, what happens to your application after it has been submitted, and also an outline of the internal processes and timescales involved once your application has been submitted. So first of all, how to submit your application. So completed applications, that is all the supporting documentation, should be submitted to the Apply IGGY email address. And that email address is on the IGGY website, on the Apply pages. In addition to that, you need to complete and submit the online IGGY PhD application form. This is automatically submitted after you've clicked on the submit button. So it isn't part of the accompanying documents that are sent by email. So at the end of the application form, there's a section on diversity monitoring. And if you can complete that section, we'd like you to, even if you just indicate in response to the questions you prefer not to say. And it's important to note that the submit button for the entire application form is at the end of the diversity monitoring form. So if you decide not to, if you get to the end of the application form, decide not to do the diversity monitoring form, you just need to scroll through that form in order to get to the submit button. And there's just a reminder of the application deadline, which is the Thursday, 26th of January at midday. So all required and completed documents, excluding the application form, which as I say is submitted separately, are to be sent in one single email, as mentioned by Suzanne. And also, just to highlight that we've got the Christmas holidays coming up. And during the period, the 19th of March to the 2nd of January inclusive, admin staff are going to be on leave, and it's very likely that supervisors are going to be on leave too. So if you do have a query during that time, you unfortunately won't get a response from the IGGY admin team. So we'll be back on Tuesday, the 3rd of January. So on receipt of your application, even if you submit it ahead of the application deadline, what we're going to be doing is just checking your application for completeness. You'll be sent an email acknowledging receipt, probably within 3 working days of submitting your application. And if there's any missing information, then we will send you an email asking you to provide it. So Suzanne mentioned that applications are saved to a shared Google Drive with restricted access, and only those involved in the recruitment process, including supervisors, have access to your application. So this slide is an overview of the internal processes and timelines after the submission deadline. And I'll just go through each one briefly, but I've got a slide on each of these, which I'll go into a bit more detail in a moment. So week commencing the 30th of January, there's a review and long list of all applications. That's done at each site. And we call that each site, we call like a local site. So University of York is a local site and Queen Mary is a local site. So each site are independently reviewing the applications that are sent to them. So if your primary supervisor is based at Queen Mary, then Queen Mary will be reviewing your application. If your primary supervisor is based at York, then York will be reviewing your application. After a long list has been drawn up, we'll be conducting local interviews during the period the 13th of February to the 3rd of March. Following those local interviews, the local teams come together, the IGGY management teams come together around about the 6th of March to decide who they want to interview again. The next day or shortly afterwards, there's a global shortlisting. What I mean about global is where both sites come together, so that's Queen Mary and York, come together to agree who to interview again. and the IGGY management team are involved in deciding who wants to be who they want to interview again. Following that, between the 13th and 16th of March, we'll be sending out invitations to the interview day, and they're sent out by email. On the 27th of March, we have the IGGY interview day. So we'll be interviewing 24, potentially, or around 24 candidates on that day. And also just to highlight here that we do have the incorrect interview date on the apply pages or on the news pages of the IGGY website, and we'll be correcting that sometime this week. So the IGGY interview day is the 27th of March. After the at the end of the IGGY interview day, there's a meeting in which it is decided who we're going to offer studentships to. So following that meeting, sometime during the period 3rd to the 7th of April, the studentship offer letters are sent out by email. So applying to IGGY is a two-stage process. So we've been talking about submitting documents to the IGGY using the apply email and the application form. Once a candidate is in receipt of an offer from IGGY, then they have to apply to their home institution. So if you're offered a studentship based at Queen Mary, then you will need to submit an application to the Central University at Queen Mary, and similarly for University of York applicants. If you are offered a studentship based at York, then you will need to apply or submit an application to Central University at York Admissions. And the reason for this is that they check all the documents, that they meet the university's criteria. There's no interviews at this stage. In addition to submitting many of the documents that you've submitted to IGGY, in addition, you'll be submitting the offer letter that we've sent you as evidence of a place within IGGY and also evidence of the funding that we're providing. Then later on, one of the key dates in the IGGY calendar is the IGGY conference. And you'll be invited, if you're offered a place, you'll be invited to the IGGY conference. And that's taking place next year, the 12th to the 14th of September. And that's taking place at Queen Mary in London. And the 1st of October is the official start date of the Studentship Award. So I'll just go through each of these, or each of those points in a bit more detail now. So week commencing the 30th of January. So the review and long list of applications. So the applications are reviewed by at least two senior members of the IGGY management team in order to develop a long list of candidates who will go through to the next stage. And to determine which candidates should be longlisted, two criteria are used to determine suitability. And the first is the research proposal must be within IGGY's scope or remit. And this is the scope and remit that has been discussed earlier by Peter and also by Jeremy and Ben. So I won't read those two statements, but they are available on the IGGY website. There's a link to these statements, and these slides will be made available later. So just looking at the final paragraph here on this slide. So research proposals must be at least 50% in EPSRC's remit. That's the funder's remit, meaning that it must constitute a contribution that can be construed as computer science research in the majority. So HCI and design research as part of HCI are part of computer science. So the second criterion used to determine suitability, so a candidate should have the appropriate or relevant foundation skills and background. Then the inclusion criteria are a candidate should have the background to complete a successful PhD on their proposed PhD topic, and a candidate should have a minimum of 2-1 or equivalent at undergraduate degree level, or a combination of qualifications and or experience equivalent to that level. And you don't need to have prior publications, or prior or firm industry or society engagement. But if you do have these, just include them in your application as they are considered at first. So once that long list has been drawn up of who we would like to take forward, those that don't make it to the long list will be sent an email informing them at this stage. For candidates who do pass the initial review stage, at this point, we'll contact your nominated supervisor and share your full application with them. And we ask that they confirm that they're happy to supervise you. We'll also send you an email inviting you to a 30-minute video. Usually the interview is on Zoom, so it's a video call with your nominated supervisor and one member of the IGGI management team. So the interview assesses whether your research and skills fit with IGGI and for you to assess whether IGGI is the right program for you to achieve what you wish. So when we send out the email inviting you to interview with the Zoom link, we'll also share with you the interview topics that will be included during the interview. And there's a list here of likely topics. So it'll include perhaps your understanding of IGGI and motivation to apply to IGGI specifically, your understanding of the expectations for PhD studies, your proposed research topic, so questions about your proposed research, your knowledge of research methods relevant to your topic, your general background knowledge in your topic, and your understanding of impacts and beneficiaries of your proposed research. So following the local interviews, so that is interviews being conducted at Queen Mary and interviews being conducted at York, all on Zoom, there's meetings at each site where the local site director, the site training and the local IGGI manager meet to consider all the applications made to their institution and to agree on a short list of candidates who they want to take forward for another interview. So applications are based, or the shortlist is based on the application documents and the interview comments and scores. And the selection criteria used in that shortlisting are fit with IGGI's remit, the likelihood for the candidate to complete a strong PhD, and the likely research and social contribution of the research. So following that local shortlisting meeting, around about the 7th of March, there's a global shortlisting meeting. So this is where the University of York and Queen Mary management team meet to cross-check the local shortlistings and agree who will be invited to the IGGI interview day. And around 24 candidates are selected at this stage. So following that meeting, that shortlisting meeting, during the period of the 13th to 16th of March, invitations to interview day are sent out. So the admin team here are setting up the interview panels. There'll be four interview panels. There'll be three members of staff on each of the panels. There's usually male and female representation on each of the panels, but your supervisor won't be involved in the interviewing at this stage. So the invitations, when you if you were to receive an invitation, you sent the Zoom link, so all interviews, again, will be online, the time of the interview, and also, again, the interview questions. Applicants who have not been selected for an interview at this stage will be informed by email. So 27th of March is the IGGI interview day. So as mentioned, it will be held on Zoom. The interview questions or topics will be shared in advance. Yes, the interview will be with three members of academic staff, including the IGGI management team. And at the end of the day, once all the interviews have been completed, there's a meeting with University of York and Queen Mary IGGI management team to agree who to offer a studentship to. A shortlist is drawn up and agreed. Sorry, So between the period 3rd to 7th of April, we start sending out the offer letters. It might be a bit earlier than this, but yes. If you're offered a studentship, we'll be sending an email to candidates from the IGGY admin email address. We'll normally ask that you accept or decline the offer within 7 days of the offer being sent to you. And we do this is because while we might have like 12 studentships and we were sending out 12 offers, we might have some on our reserve list. So if you're unable to accept the offer or wish to decline the offer, then we might be able to offer to students who are on reserve list. So after all offers have been accepted, candidates who have not been selected for a studentship will be informed again by email. So this is the next stage in the application process. So once, or if you're in receipt of a studentship offer, then during the period April to June, some months, you'll then ask you to apply to your home institution. So that is at Queen Mary or University of York. And during this time as well, IGGY will arrange opportunities for the incoming students to chat with current IGGY researchers. And we've done this previously on Discord. So as mentioned, the IGGY conference takes place between the 12th and 14th of September next year at Queen Mary. So that's an in-person conference. So it comprises 3 days. Day one is the internal day, and that's just for all of IGGY researchers and also IGGY staff. So it's an opportunity to welcome everyone, to welcome the new students, and just activities around or for the IGGY researchers alone. Days two and three, this is where we open up the conference to industry representatives, and it's an opportunity for researchers to showcase their research and also for networking opportunities. And the 1st of October is the official start date of the studentship award. So the actual term date or the semester start date at your home institution will likely be a week or so before that. So there'll be PGR inductions run centrally. So that will happen just, say, a week or so before the start date of your award. And then once you've started, then we're looking at starting the IGGY modules, and they normally start in mid-October, so just a few weeks after you've started. And that's it, thank you. So if there's any questions, I'll just stop sharing screen. Okay. So I'll just have a look at the document if there's any questions there. No, I think they've all been answered. So there's a question there about the game jam by IGGY. So we do have an IGGY game jam in January. At the moment, we're just finalising number of IGGY researchers that are going to be attending. When we've got that final number, then there may be an opportunity to invite other people along to that, and we'll be making tickets available on Eventbrite, but at this stage we don't know how many that will be. We're just having to work within the sort of room capacity and so on, but yeah, so potentially yes. I think all the questions have been answered, haven't they? So yeah. So we've got a few more minutes till there's a general question and answer session, I believe, and Paul is going to join us.
If people want maybe a quick comfort break before that session, or
yeah, we could do that and come back in. The next session starts at 5:30, doesn't it? So, so we do that then. Let's just take a quick break. And if you've got any questions in the meantime, just pop them in the Word document and we'll pick those up. Okay, thank you. See you shortly.